you know, when I was helping Dad on the farm at home, we're involved in that food supply chain. Ended up in my career working for a business that was providing the property from which food was sold. And now at Potager Farm, we were producing food again. And it's all part of that really intricate food supply chain. And people don't really think about how complicated the processes are and supply chains are that get food into their fridge at home or onto their plate in a restaurant.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is David O'Mara from the Green Man Group, and he's the person behind the new Growing Further Awards. This is a masterclass in real estate and spotting trends. Here's my chat with David. Going green, becoming more sustainable, it's everywhere, right? Everyone wants to be greener and do their bit to help. But sometimes, for your business, there are more important things to do. It's hard to find the time. Well, take it out of your hands because it's all in a day's work for your local enterprise office. They have the time and the experts to sort it for you. And the best bit is, it'll help your business, save you time, money, and energy. Perfect, right? The Green for Business audit will assess your business and tell you where you can make changes. And the new energy efficiency grant will help you pay for those changes. And your local enterprise office will sort the whole process for you. Go to www.allinadayswork.ie/green, fill out the form that takes less than 2 minutes, and your local enterprise office will take it from there. Going green? It's all in a day's work for your local enterprise office. Many of you listening to the pod are business owners and savvy investors, but have you been introduced to peer-to-peer lending? Peer-to-peer lending is the practice of lending money directly to other individuals or businesses without the need for a traditional intermediary like a bank. Property Bridges offers you the opportunity to lend directly to experienced home builders across Ireland through their innovative online investment platform. Investors earn returns of up to 9% per annum, and your money is fully secured against property. To learn more, visit propertybridges.com. Property Bridges is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns. They're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of the Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today. David, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me, Gary. Good to didn't know you were a fellow tip man until recently, so yeah.
That's just how it's going to open up. With
makes it all the sweeter.
Two tip men taking over the world.
That's it.
Tip mafia. Paul Hayes as well. We've had a run of tip people in the last kind of couple of months.
Yeah, good stuff. Glad to hear it.
Welcome. Good chat to you. What do you do?
I am Chief Commercial Officer for Green Man Investments, and I have a second hat where I'm the founder of the Growing Further Innovation Program that we run as well. So between the two stools, I'm pretty busy.
One job wasn't enough. Decided to create a new one for yourself.
Yeah, I need more grey hairs.
So what do Green Man do?
We are part of the Green Man Group. So we are involved in five different areas, which is real estate, financial services, utilities, resources, and networks. Short way of explaining it is that our whole thing is grocery retail. So we started off as a property investment business about nearly 20 years ago, specialized in supermarkets in Germany about, 12 to 15 years ago. And we've really driven on since then. So we have managed about 1.3 billion worth of supermarket anchored properties, mainly in Germany, but also through sister businesses in France and Poland.
Why Germany?
83 million people, they all need to eat. Three times a day. So it's a huge market. But from a grocery perspective, it's very concentrated. You have five retail groups that sell nearly over 90% of all the food.
Okay.
It's very competitive. So that landscape kind of changed. What's happening here with kind of consolidation and, supermarket brands having to change their market. Think of Dunn Stores, for example. They've gone from that value end to very much the luxury end of the market.
Mm.
That all happened in Germany kind of 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
So you're left with the ones who have survived are Edeka, for example, biggest retailer in Germany, don't operate anywhere else. turnover about 60 billion each year, about 11,500 stores in the country. So really the only way to invest with them, they're a co-op, is to do what we do, is to own the property that they operate from. And they are always trying to keep on top of the competition. They differentiate themselves on their choice, their range of produce, and the quality of it. Whereas the discounters in Germany are still very much that hard discount, stack it high, kind of sell it cheap. They soft their approach here a little bit.
It's different here, because I definitely feel in the last 5 years, 6 years maybe, it's much slicker, the range is much better, much more focus on Irish products.
Yeah. Less so in Germany. They've stuck to their DNA more so over there. It's softened a little bit. They're getting kind of larger kind of footprints within the store. And the larger hypermarkets are taking less, so they're kind of meeting each other a little bit in the middle, which is good for us. You know, we're an investment manager, so we operate investment funds that manage these properties. So any change in the market is good, and a change in strategy, should I say, but that leads to opportunities to sniff out an opportunity to get a lease extension, renegotiate the rent, something like that, which all helps us generate a long-term return for investors.
So they lease their properties from you. They don't own them themselves.
They tend not to own themselves too much.
Okay.
We don't have that many Lidl stores, for example. They tend to own and operate themselves. This Lidl is owned by the Schwartz Group, or the Schwartz family. They also have a hypermarket brand called Kaufland, and Kaufland is changing a little bit. They're looking for less floor space. They're trying to change their retail concept, which takes a lot of investment, very much focused on sustainability as well. And to kind of finance those things, they enter into a lot of sale and lease back kind of deals with the likes of us. And they want a long-term partnership with someone who understands the business and is going to stick with them for the long term. And that's our whole strategy, long-term buy and hold strategy, and try and convert as much of that rental income to investor income over the very long term. So
I suppose it's symbiotic, right? They don't want to move.
Yeah.
Because, you know, supermarkets don't really up and just go move three streets over.
I always think about my mother has shopped in the same place for probably 50-odd years since she moved from Cork to Tipperary, and she'd be horrified if her Dunn stores ever moved location. So that the supermarket shopping is really habit-based. It needs to be convenient. Go in, get your stuff. I know that's an aisle three, I know that's an aisle two, or it's beside the eggs. And people hate when their habits change, and that's just human nature. So
it's so weird. I never would consider myself that way, and I'd always go to like the specific, like either Aldi or Lidl and Greystones. And then I went into Bray last week, and it was like I'd had a head injury. I was like wandering around lost.
Shelbyville.
It was like, exactly. I was like,
life's so strange over here in Bray.
I was like, Jesus, I don't like it, because everything was. It's so weird you say that. Like, we're such creatures of habit. Like, we all think we're these unique individual people, but we really are creatures of habit. Like, absolutely, so I guess for you then, from an investment point of view, it kind of makes sense, because they want probably a long, stable partner.
Correct.
You want a long, stable partner for the investments. How did you identify this area as the area to focus on? First of all, Germany, you said kind of like it's big kind of retail, but why retail? Like, and why that specific model?
Well, initially going back to kind of 2005 and 2006, the investment thesis was Berlin is going to be this really cool leading city again, and it's probably undervalued, and there's going to be lots of investment going its way, which was true. So the very early stages of the business was kind of investing in apartments and that kind of stuff. But to get a more sustainable long-term business, we wanted something with long-term leases, good quality, reliable rental income and tenants. And we actually started in the auto service center area, kind of petrol stations, tire retailers,
right,
some which we actually still have in the fund, and really good locations in Berlin. And then it's no great foresight, but through that, you're going to, business evolves, and we met a developer who said you need to be getting into supermarkets to get longer leases, better quality tenants. And that's how it really started. So that was probably about 2009, 2010. The world was in a pretty grim place.
I was just going to say, what a brilliant time to start getting into property. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. So I joined business in 2011. Trying to convince people to invest in real estate and in Germany was difficult, but we started small, built it up slowly over time. And I suppose the concept kind of proved itself, you know, get good quality tenant relationships. That's the key to our business, really. We're not the type of investor who buys it, looks to buy it for X and flip it for 1.5 times or 2 times X. We want to operate these for decades to come.
Right.
And the tenants absolutely love that. That they want that certainty. They want to focus on their core business as retailers. They have real estate arms, but they don't want to build them up too much. They want to have a reliable partner. I mean, We have a sister company in France we established a few years ago for, you know, French properties, French investors and French assets. And they acquired a portfolio from a private equity company. And the retailer said, well, they never even visited the properties in 10 years. Whereas we are very different approach. We kind of very self-sufficient. We do all that property asset management stuff ourselves and kind of prioritize that tenant relationship, which is really important for getting long-term returns for investors.
That sounds like a heavy lift, though. That sounds like a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, yeah. We've big team. So there's now 10 different companies in the Green Man Group. And in that, probably the largest sector is that real estate group. So we have big offices in Berlin, also team in Frankfurt and Hamburg as well, where we have an energy business. It takes a lot of work, but it's very important work as well. And it allows us to unearth opportunities to, the whole agenda is to keep these buildings as valuable as possible, because that's collecting values for investors and relevant for the long term. So there's huge changes afoot in real estate from a sustainability point of view, and we're well positioned. We established this energy business where we're retrofitting. We looked at our stock of buildings I think about 2.5-3 years ago, only 2% of them are covered in solar panels. I think we're up to north of 15% now. So huge opportunity there with these simple kind of single story constructions. These buildings aren't much to look at. It's your kind of suburban, you know, neighborhood retail park. But huge opportunity to retrofit this kind of infrastructure, which makes it cheaper for the tenant to occupy the property. And by putting this infrastructure in ourselves, we can grab more of that share that cost of operating the property for our investors.
You're making it better for them. Like, you know, it's more sustainable. You're making it better for them.
Yeah.
You're making the property better for yourselves. It's kind of a no-win. Is solar a no-brainer?
I think so, yeah. I mean, particularly, there was a bit of reluctance initially when we started approaching our tenants about this. They're tied into long-term contracts with their utility providers. And if they stick within a certain kind of, energy usage parameters, it's fine. But if they step outside of that, they get quite heavily penalized. And then, not to take advantage of a bad situation, but the Ukraine situation kicked off, and then they got obsessed with energy independence, which is particularly acute in Germany, that need. So I suppose our timing was probably good. That came along about 2 years after we're starting to have those conversations, and the attitude switched pretty quickly from the tenants. So they're very keen now to buy energy from the landlords, which is not something they would have considered previously at all. So
it's a cool model, like, and it makes sense when you think about it. Like, I know you talk about integration a lot, like, but it's a kind of a no-brainer model, again, to use that word. Like, I mean, it's mad, the butterfly effect of something happening, like a war breaking out, and suddenly what a good agenda you were trying to bring through now kind of has its time.
We look at it kind of think of a pie chart. So for the cost of occupying the property for a tenant is about 50% of that pie chart, typically, give or take. So as an investment manager, for our investors, we were only getting half of that pie. But if we're now getting involved in other parts of that pie chart, providing the energy, if we can make it cheaper for the tenant to the cost of their spend on gas, electricity, whatever, if we can make it cheaper for them, but also get some of that for our investors, that's a win-win in both regards. And that's the mission that we're trying to do.
And you're giving them certainty then down the line of, like you talked about energy independence there, like, you know, it's going to be pretty stable, I would imagine.
100%. And it's a huge topic in Germany politically and from a commercial point of view. You know, there's close ties to Russia and stuff, so that energy independence is a really big thing. The other element, that Green Man Energy, so it's my colleague Max Blay that runs that side out in Hamburg. We have hypercharged fast chargers for electric vehicles and rolling out that infrastructure across our portfolio properties. So we see that's really important to future-proof the properties to make them as relevant as possible. But also it's changing consumer behavior. So people are changing their shopping patterns based on where the best hyperchargers are. You can get 20-minute, 80% charge in a typical car, and the tenants absolutely love that because, okay, great. And my guy in Shelbyville down the road, that customer's now come to me because I've got a fast charger. And that's really important in Germany because a lot of people tend to live in apartments and that, you know, they're quite slow as well as here in Ireland. It's a bit of an issue, that rollout of the infrastructure.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, to be honest. I don't drive an electric car, but I was given a BYD car for a while, and I was driving that, and I was heading up to, driving past Carrick Mines. I was like, oh, I've like 8% left. Pulled in, I was like, I'll just top it up, and they're like 14 hours. I was like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
So like I couldn't get over how slow, like it's almost pointless.
Yeah.
They're so slow it's almost pointless.
Yeah.
Where like I do see fast chargers popping up at kind of like the major service stations along the motorway and things like that. Is it kind of getting rolled out here slower?
I'm not too in touch with it in Ireland, to be honest. Again, I'm a caveman. I've got a diesel Tiguan. Hope to get a electric car in the next short while, actually. But yeah, I mean, I have colleagues, our sales team, for example, are all on electric cars now. The guys who are out on the road doing the real hard work.
Yeah.
I think it's just a case of planning. You know, if you have a good setup at home and then planning your route, but then you do need to be conscious if your plans change about where the chargers are. And I haven't heard any horror stories yet of any of the guys getting stranded.
No. So talk to me then about.
Well, there's one thing that's actually pretty interesting.
Okay.
You might find about that with the fast chargers. We talk about changing how we look at the consumers. So we're looking at already pretty commonplace in America. People are using their cars to power their homes and kind of reverse charging, if you know what I mean. So we're looking at using that concept. And we're talking to our tens about doing that at the moment. So getting these kind of reverse charging batteries that will be able to store enough energy to power a typical supermarket for 2 hours.
Wow.
So you can have, if you think your customer...
So the car charges the building, not the other way around.
Exactly, yeah.
That's
yeah.
mental.
But that battery storage technology is there. It's just making that link between getting the consumer to drive to the supermarket, getting a discount from their shopping to sell energy back to the supermarket. And the benefit for the supermarket then is that if they don't step outside of those tariffs that I talked about, they can get where they get really penalized if they step outside of those and they get cheaper energy from the consumer. So it's a really, we're looking at our customers in much different ways. So blurring that definition of what the customer is for our investment fund. So again, all of the view to try and make it cheaper for the tenant to occupy the property, but find ways for our investors to kind of capitalize on that.
And multi-use of the property as well. I think that's exactly kind of the future. Yeah. When I kind of walk around like cities now, I'm kind of like looking at like so many cities are really struggling. And you see pubs and they're closed for like 10 hours a day. And I'm like, those days are over. Like you can't afford to have them sitting empty for all that time. Whereas I was in Cork the weekend and the pub was like, it was a cafe until like 2 o'clock and then it was a restaurant. And then it was a pub again. Really interesting. Like they're the kind of innovations you want to see. Like talk to me then about the retail, like what's happening in retail? Because like we've obviously had the COVID.
Yeah.
How has that impacted retail? Because there was a massive spike and then a drop off, then a spike and a drop off. So what's happening now?
Well, it's interesting. Let's say pre-COVID, the investor, you know, chats we were having, discussions, the big obsession was, well, what's the impact going to be of e-commerce and online shopping on your business? Because that was the really big talk back in 17, 18, 19. Obviously, large scale shopping centers, which we're not involved in, were struggling and kind of continue to struggle. They have a lot of that mid-range kind of fashion brand type stuff. We get about 70% of our rent from food retail. Interestingly, in Germany, they're very reluctant to get involved in, consumers are very reluctant to get on board with online shopping. And that kind of stayed the same, really. In
online shopping COVID. Across the board or just for food?
For food in particular, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
Not to get too much into national stereotypes, but very cost conscious.
we don't have a big German listener. Yeah, so we're okay. Yeah.
But it's a lot of stereotypes are true. Very cost conscious, but they didn't see the value in it. They're also very well stocked with supermarkets that are very close to the end consumer. So whether that's your mix of discounter and full assortment retailers, a lot of them tend to be on the same site. You don't see that Aaron so much, but the equivalent of your Dunn Stores or Etika or Reva will be right beside a discounter on the same site.
Okay.
So people go in, get their stuff and get out. And they might go to the frequency of shopping. They'll typically, on average, go 3-4 times a week.
Really?
We do more of it.
No big shop over there.
No big shop. Less of a big shop, I would say, culture.
Why is that then, David? Is that like cultural? Is that just because the better infrastructure? They're longer.
I think better infrastructure. They tend to be, they call it a polycentric population. There's lots of very big towns and cities in Germany. It's not a big drain towards Berlin or any big city. There's some like 80 cities and more than 100,000 people. So it's a very spread out population.
It's more balanced.
More balanced. And they're very well serviced with these well located supermarkets that are right beside the end consumer. And it's that last kilometer of delivery is really expensive. So when COVID kicked off, we were like, okay, well, this will be interesting. This will be a stress test for what we've been saying, because we felt that there was going to be slow evolution towards maybe more on e-commerce or online shopping. But this was a big stress test for the whole scenario. And obviously, e-commerce kind of kicked off a little bit, but it's rolled back quite a lot. And at the end of the day, if you do an online order, 90% of the time that's being fulfilled from your local supermarket. It's right. not some large warehouse in the middle of the country or in Ireland. It's not down in Athlone or Portlaoise or something. It's from your closest supermarket. So from our point of view, the good thing is that, well, we had clarity that it's this omni-channel approach to retail. It's not a revolution where your old way of shopping is gone.
So it's an evolution, not an extinction for you.
Correct.
It's
yeah. just so the your local supermarket is where people shop as they always have done, with the trolley and screaming kids and all that good stuff that comes with that. It's where people do their click and collect, which was the kind of new area that came during COVID.
Which and makes sense. You can see how that makes sense.
Yeah. yeah. And these e-fulfillment. So from our point of view, it's just an opportunity. Well, perhaps we had to make changes to some of our properties to give more warehouse space, for example, as opposed to retail floor space, but adjustments. But we have a very large portfolio. None of them shut down or changed because of e-commerce. So that's what people expected to happen, but it didn't really happen. So I think for fresh food, fruit, vegetables, meat, that kind of stuff, people like to go touch it, smell it, feel it, and make their own judgment. That's not going to change. And even for the non-perishables, people can order them online, but still done from your local supermarket, which is a good thing. So I think to answer your question in a roundabout way, sustainability is the really big focus for these retailers. They've been focusing on that in their core business for a long, long while, and that stuff like, you know, animal welfare standards and that kind of stuff has been a big obsession for them for quite a while. But they're also really large occupiers of real estate. There are 34,000 supermarkets in Germany, for example, about 20,000 in France. That's a huge, huge footprint. And they're conscious now in their conversations with us as well, how can these buildings that we occupy continue to be, how can we continue to occupy this building in 10, 15, 20 years time without having to tear down and start again? So that work we're doing on the energy side is really important, helping those buildings have less of an impact. We've started a pilot project now with a company called New Carbon based in Berlin for carbon capture. That's kind of attached to the outlets for the air conditioning units, and converting carbon that's emitted and converting it to a kind of liquid form or gas form. So tenants, you're pushing on an open door with the tenants when you're approaching them with these kind of pilot projects, which is pretty cool.
That's really interesting. What other trends are you seeing in property kind of broader? Like what's happening post-COVID? Because I know the city centres seem to be having a tough time. What are you seeing? Because you have a footprint all across Germany. Like what are you seeing in kind of, what's the future of cities, I guess, what I'm trying to ask you.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I guess we're quite special in what we do, and we focus on that retail space. Office is the big question mark. Even just come along here today, AO City Centre. It's everyone wants the A grade, energy efficient offices with the parking spaces for their cargo bikes and all of that.
They want all the toys. Like if they're coming in, they want all the toys,
all the bells and whistles. So those properties are in demand. What I'm hearing in the market is that, you know, there's still a large stock in Dublin that they're reluctant to carve up the floor space. They want the large companies to come and occupy those, but there's probably going to come a time where they're going to have to break those down a little bit and let kind of your SME sector maybe access a quarter of a floor or half a floor, but that I don't think that's happened yet. So that's the big question mark in relation to offices. But, you know, seeing different, if you look at traffic levels, I mean, it doesn't seem that things have calmed down a huge amount. So there is a bit of a push for people to come back to the office. So maybe that will, personally, I think that might calm down over time and city centres will be more buoyant and offices will catch up again. But in Dublin, for example, I mean, there's that, you know, we're based kind of around the Mount Street area. There's huge amount of, you know, traditional office area that's not suitable for being offices and makes a lot of investment to get it up to scratch. So maybe I'd like to see those converted back into, you know, apartment living, that kind of stuff. I don't know if that's possible, but that'd be a cool part of the city around that Baggy Street area. And there's people need to be more purpose-built offices, I think, and leave the old Georgian buildings back into resi.
It kind of feels we're in a catch-22, doesn't it? Because a lot of them were converted back in the day into offices when people didn't want to live in the city. And now people want to live in the city, but to convert them back is really expensive.
Takes cash.
Yeah. Doesn't meet fire code. There's so many things you have to jump over.
Yeah.
To convert them back. So it kind of feels like we're in this kind of like catch 22 if they're not suitable for either now.
Yeah. Well, I was reading actually about the UK. They think the Labour government obviously have this big mandate, and that's something they're really looking at, is trying to the standards and stuff for reutilization of properties and stuff. They're trying to make that much more straightforward. So if they can't do it with the majority they have, I don't think anyone will be able to do it. So
yeah, because even walking around Cork, I was in Cork the weekend, walking around Cork, there's so many empty property.
Yeah.
Like in the city centre, so much empty property. And like you go to like Europe, you go to Malaga or somewhere like that. There's such energy in the city.
Yeah.
It doesn't
yeah.
empty at five.
Big time,
It's a living city. Like, yeah. So it's really interesting that like, I do think it'll come back. Like I do feel like yourself, I think there'll be an evolution like of kind of like it'll regrow into something else. Mm. You'll have the really high end office blocks and then everything else should go back in towards residential.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're both rural people originally, but, you know, there's no shortage of properties. There's no, you know, there's a dereliction problem in the country, not a lack of stock, if you know what I mean. So trying to...
Why is that?
I don't know. I don't know the answers. You know, you go down any kind of main street in any kind of town in Ireland and it's empty. You know, the shutters
it's
up.
Weird.
It'd be great to get, like, the likes of, I don't know, Nina, for example. I'm sure there's plenty of derelict places there that get people living in them.
Make Nina great again.
Nina's probably a bad example. Nina is a bit of a buzzing town, you know.
It always has. It's kind of a central nexus. Like a lot of stuff passes through. So it is. It does okay. But I know what you mean. Like there is a lot of towns in Ireland you drive through.
And they're sad. Like they're,
oh, gosh. Yeah. I drove to Oma there a few weeks ago. A friend of mine has a MMA gym up there. I was going to visit him for an event. And Jesus, sometimes you drove through. Didn't see one person.
Yeah, yeah.
Single street towns, empty, 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 empty. Everyone's left.
Yeah. Now, I'm probably the wrong person to talk about it because I've made my life in Dublin, or whatever. But I don't think this drain of population towards the big city is a good thing. So,
well, I think it's going back the other way. People during COVID left. They were like, I remember we moved out to Wicklow just before COVID. People thought we're insane.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, but like, would you not buy in Dublin? We're like, no, no, we could,
but
we wanted to live in Wicklow. And then 6 months later, they're like, oh, weren't you smart?
Yeah.
Weren't you smart? You saw what was coming. You're like, well, not really. Like, but then, like, not that big.
I feel very sorry for, you know, people in their early, mid-20s trying to start out. And like, just the cost of rent is insane. Absolutely insane. So
I was literally on a call with someone before that, before you came in, and I was asking them what the rental market was in Limerick at the minute, and it was a 2-bed apartment, and they were saying, oh, about 1800. I was like, in Limerick,
yeah.
They're like, oh, it's booming. No, it wasn't for an estate agent, so you know, take that with a pinch of salt. But I just couldn't get over
5 years ago, what would that have been? You know,
600 quid,
yeah, it's crazy.
It does seem a bit unsustainable,
yeah.
It does feel like
so. That's the big question mark I'd have. I mean, the affordability for people. You don't want to see mass emigration with people. And you got generations of people living with their parents into their 30s, which, you know, isn't the healthiest thing in the world, maybe.
Not really. You do kind of wonder where it goes, like, especially when people are more mobile now. We do have a more mobile workforce. Like, people are now willing to go, oh, I'm just going to go to Spain for 6 months, work there. My job's remote. Why not?
I'm kind of conscious of talking about Germany a lot, but what you do tend to see there is more than some of the, from a planning point of view, a lot of the more modern developments, they will insist in having... If it's a new build for a retail unit, for example, they'll insist on having residential on the top floors. So you have less kind of, you have more concentrated development. But a lot of it tends to be this kind of assisted living type setup for elderly people. So you're beside your pharmacy, you're beside your supermarket, you're beside the train station, and they're very good at that kind of
joint 15-minute city.
Correct, yeah.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah, and we don't really have that here per se. They talk about a residential, you know, people downsizing and stuff, but in Ireland, you don't really have, what are your options if you want to downsize? But they seem to be a bit further ahead in Germany when it comes to that. So
why is Ireland so flat? Like, why is the city so flat? I'm asking you all the tough questions today.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got a property expert here. I'm going to get well, all the answers.
You're straying to areas of property that I'm not an expert on for sure. But,
what do you think? Like, from a personal point of view, like, cause I was up in Stepaside there a few months ago, and just looking back on the city, I'm like, looks like a carpet.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a few things that pop up here and there, but it just looks like a carpet.
It's NIMBYism, isn't it? People not in my backyard. People don't want to, people are so scared to change and reluctant for change, but cities evolve over time, so I'd be a huge proponent of going more high rise in there's no, as you say, there's no shortage of space.
Like, we don't have a shortage of space.
Yeah.
We have a shortage of vision.
Yeah. You see now, the glass bottle site's been redeveloped and that's absolutely flying up. That's taken.
I've read books about that. Yeah. Like, that's what the Celtic Tiger was built on. And then that was the tipping point. That was the canary in the coal mine.
I was probably a teenager when I started reading about that in the papers, but I could look at
hundreds of millions. Same with the site on Balls Bridge there. So that's only still tipping along.
It's crazy.
Feels like NIMBYism. Like, it does feel like there's, you know, everyone wants the solution, but no one wants it near them.
Near them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ireland's in a strange spot. Getting back to business. You started the Growing Further Awards. Like, why did you start that?
Well, it started with a vague idea that I had, and then kind of snowballed into something and got a lot of backing. So, I suppose as a business, we've gotten involved in lots of different areas. We talked about the energy side. We also got involved in vertical farming. So we, in the Green Man Group, are growing herbs and salad leaves in a secure unit vertical farm. We have 3 kind of 9 meter high towers, 4 kilometers from the Brandenburg Gate. We're growing.
I was not expecting to say vertical farming was where we're going with this one.
Right, okay. Yeah.
The group really does do a lot.
We've got involved in lots of different areas. We haven't stuck to our knitting just as a property investor, let's put it that way.
But there's a straight line through. I can see the straight line through of all your ideas and all your businesses. They all have that straight line through anchored in food property.
Food. That straight line is apparent now when you look back, thankfully. But yeah.
It's like Steve Jobs. The dots connect in reverse.
So you
look back and it makes sense. But I appreciate sharing that, because like, a lot of founders don't start because they think they have to have the idea out of the box. They think they have to have like, oh, we're just going to invest in, I've this idea, German real estate, shopping centers. You didn't get there first time. You went property, retail, automotive, into retail.
A lot of it is that tender relationship is really important. Kind of taking the future of their business very seriously and seeing what's important to them.
Well, you have to understand the market. You have to understand the market by being in the market. You can't understand the market by reading about it. We talked about reports and stuff earlier. It only gives you so much context.
Yeah.
The reality is when you're talking to someone one-to-one, that's when you see trends and things emerge. So the Growing Further, it started as a vague idea. What was the vague idea?
Vague idea was that we had done lots of things that we felt were quite innovative in our business and got involved in different areas. And people, we wanted a way to demonstrate that. People working with us and working for us probably really didn't get how important the stuff was, and particularly the energy and the vertical farming. And then chatting kind of internally with some people, and I grew up on a dairy farm in Tipperary, and a lot of people that work in the Green Man Group actually are from agricultural backgrounds. And, you know, when I was helping Dad on the farm at home, we're involved in that food supply chain. Ended up in my career working for a business. I was providing the property from which food is sold. And now at Potager Farm, we were producing food again. And it's all part of that really intricate food supply chain. And people don't really think about how complicated the processes are and supply chains are that get food into their fridge at home or onto their plate in a restaurant or whatever. And we're just kind of conscious that there's all this kind of cool stuff happening, particularly from a sustainability point of view, and trying to operate that food supply chain in a more efficient kind of manner. And we wanted to find out what was going on. We talked about the example earlier. We could have paid some consultancy company would gladly have taken our money to, if we commissioned a report, and that would sit in a shelf somewhere and might have been good, might have been bad, whatever. But we said, well, let's have an innovation awards program that will help us A, kind of find out what's going on, what are the important issues that early stage businesses and entrepreneurs are working on, and B, I suppose, help us position our brand in relation to innovation and what's cool and what's good. And I suppose what we found to the first year of the awards, we had the first awards in January this year in the Marker Hotel. We got 58 entries, I think, from 18 different countries. So it was much more international than we thought it would be. But it was that as our business became more established, and we're now a group of 10 different businesses who are smaller, but trying to keep in touch with that entrepreneurial spirit is really important as you grow a business. And the energy in that room in January was crazy.
Like, it's all mad, isn't it?
Enthusiasm. Yeah. We had 12 finalists. From I think 6 countries, 3 of them Irish, 3 German, and the winner is actually from France. And just their enthusiasm, the drive and energy, it was really cool. We had about 200 odd people in the room and it was just brilliant.
So, it's a buzz. There's nothing like it when you have early stage founders who are actually building something real, who have a product, who are in market. The information they're getting is second to none.
Yeah.
They're directly hooked up to the source.
Yeah, it was really cool. So, and to be honest, in year one, we'd no idea what we're doing. We're like, okay, let's do these awards. And we'd no profile. Nobody knew who we were in the world, that early stage startup world. We were kind of...
Which is noisy. It's really noisy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on there.
And they're all busy, you know. We try to make the process light as possible, so not to have too difficult to apply. And we trying to focus and make very much, you know, entrant centric to make it a worthwhile process for them that even if they didn't win a prize. So the prize fund's €100,000. We had four different categories, €12,500 per category. And then the winner got an additional 50,000. So 62.5 grand.
That's chunky.
It's generous. It's
proper money. You see some of these things and I'm at them and I'm like, they're phony. Like they're like, oh, 10 grand prize. And then you pick it apart and you're like, oh, credits for this and credits for that. And 1 hour with Gary. And you're like, that's not, it is worth 10 grand. But
photo with Dave,
you know, you're kind of going, ah, don't be making them jump through hoops for stuff that's not worth it.
Yeah.
Like, whereas like that's proper cash, but they're also plugging into your network, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, what we can provide, we have this really large, property portfolio that we manage. We have really good tenant relationships with some of the, you know, five of the top six retailers in Europe. And what we're really interested in doing is using that for pilot projects and interesting things that can draw those links between startup businesses and the retailers. And the retailers are really interested in finding out what's new and what's coming down the track as well. So we can't promise anything, but we've definitely opened doors for people in year one, and we hope to continue to do that. And again, that's a way for us to demonstrate to our tenants we take the future of their business and our business obviously very, very seriously. So they're cool links to be able to make. Ultimately, what we'd like to do as well is use this as a platform and a pipeline maybe to build up a kind of a venture capital type or co-investment type fund or strategy. We're going to do it for 2-3 years first to kind of get our head around it and how the initiative works, how the program works. But we're coming across interesting businesses all the time. And we have a very large investor base as well who like investing in, you know, they're safe as they're safe, kind of safe as houses, real estate type stuff. And, but if we can find a way to structure something to, because people like to invest in stories, they like to invest in people. And this is a really cool way to, and it wasn't the intention at the start, but after year one, I think we'd like to structure some kind of VC type fund out of it in maybe year two or three.
So. Makes a lot of sense. And like it's beautiful because it compounds over time. You're going to have all these alumni.
Yeah.
And they're only going to get better. It's like when people say to me, oh, you're going to run out of guests for the pod soon. I'm like, it doesn't work like that.
Only if people stop coming up with ideas and doing
precisely
stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah. And I'm at this 5 years now, and now it's cool because I'm going back and visiting people I met 5 years ago, and they're in a totally different space.
And in 15 years, you'll have kids of people that you interviewed online.
It's so cool. Like, I mean, it all compounds. Like, you were asking me how I get guests. Like, it all compounds. Like, I build a network through each individual person, and then, you know, you have a full form network there like yourselves. It makes total sense. And to build an investment arm on top of this, like it's a really, really clear. What are the categories that you're looking at?
Yeah, so we've tweaked them a little bit this year. We're trying to have them reflect where we're active as a group. So we have production, which is kind of ag tech and food tech. So that primary production or secondary kind of processing of food and ingredients. We have distribution and retail, which is anything in relation to the kind of transport or that kind of stuff, which is a huge area. We have the built environment. So that is anything to do with building, really. And that's specifically broad. So anything that can be applied to making a building run and operate more efficiently, we're kind of interested to hear from people. And that's very much relevant for us. And customer engagement, that's a new one we have this year. A lot of the work we're doing is in relation to harnessing of data and trying to make our buildings run more in a more automated fashion or more efficiently, and also how people view the customer or communicate with the customer. So that's a new area. So there's lots of really interesting stuff kind of going on in that area that we're aware it's out there. We don't even know who's doing it. So we want to hear from those people. So it's very, very broad. I mean, you know, our whole thing is food retail, but a lot of companies out there might fit into, it might be applicable to food retail and all sorts of other industries, for example. But we do want to hear from a very broad range of people. So last year's winner, for example, a company come from France called Spore Bio. They have a, they're trying to replace, their mission is trying to replace the Petri dish.
Okay.
So everyone knows the Petri dish from their junior short science.
I'm having biology flashbacks here. Correct, double biology on Thursday morning.
Breaking out in cold sweats there.
Not my strong suit.
So they see the Petri dish is still the backbone of the pharmaceutical, food and cosmetics industries to detect contamination in that whole production chain.
Right.
And it takes 5 days to get results back. And if you think about the cost that goes into recalling products or throwing out batches from production if they detect that contamination. So Spore Bio have come up with this machine learning driven AI, I suppose, hardware that will identify contamination in moments as opposed to 5 days.
Wow.
So the interesting thing, when they're less than 2 years in existence, when they applied to us, they were just getting up and running in year one. So that was, let's say, August. By November, they'd raised £8 million.
Oh,
by the
wow.
time they came to us in January, they'd got a contract with L'Oreal. So they're really high potential.
Rocket ship.
Yeah. But and their applicability is not just in food. They I think pharmaceuticals is a big thing they see as a huge kind of target for them. But initially they're kind of going down that cosmetics route, which is really interesting, but equally applicable to the food supply chain. So, so we've everyone from that to, you know, people who are doing soil sensors and, that waste reduction is a really kind of big theme that we're seeing out there. That's really important in the food area.
So. Yeah. Cause like it makes total sense when you talk about, you know, it's so much work and it's so much money to get the food from the farm or the country to Ireland to the sea. I always think about this, like all the different stages, like, so it has to get on a ship and has to get shipped here, then trucked, then taken off the truck, put on the shelf. Like there's so much manpower and energy that goes into that.
Yeah. It is crazy. Yeah.
It's wild. Like I was on the ferry to Spain last year and I was just geeking out on the logistics of the ferry. My wife's a patient woman. And I was just talking to all these people.
Must be love.
They were shipping stuff over and I randomly bumped into the guy who used to buy all the dairy products for the Canary Islands. And that was his job, was to bring dairy products from the UK and Ireland down to the Canary Islands. And he said it was just a constant battle.
Yeah.
You know, the trucks are loaded on, that should be hooked up to the refrigerated unit. They should make sure it's getting collected within a certain amount of time when it gets off the ferry and then trucked down through Spain onto another ferry. Like, it's wild.
Yeah.
Like, we don't process that.
I always think about those, you know, couple of days after Christmas when the supermarket shelves are bare and you're like, oh, like
the ultimate inconvenience, right?
Yeah. It's like, oh my God. And like, a couple of small kids, we probably spend about £200 a month on berries. And like, if they don't have blueberries in the fridge, like 12 months a year, there's a riot.
I started buying frozen blueberries.
Yeah.
Oh, they're delicious.
Oh, really?
With yogurt. That's my go-to snack to keep me healthy.
Not sure if it's going to go get past muster of my kids now.
Natural yogurt.
I'll try it.
It's like ice cream. Natural yogurt at night. Here he goes, an insight into my psychology. Natural yogurt, Greek yogurt, frozen berries, a little bit of dark chocolate.
Okay.
That's my... Keep the sweet tooth at bay.
My
give friends. It to them, see how it goes.
Yeah.
See what the feedback is.
Oh, they're very demanding. So yeah, I will let you know on that.
But even berries, how did the hell do berries just get there?
Like, and they come from all over the world. And, you know, if they're out of season in Peru, they're in season in South Africa or whatever. But the complexity of that supply chain is kind of fascinating. And it's hard to get your head around.
It is.
And no one's got a full view of the whole thing works. But we're involved in a couple of different areas there. So interested in trying to find out what the important things are and what people are trying to work on and do more efficiently. Mm.
Like people get so caught up in every new trend buzzword that comes out. Jesus, everything is AI now. AI this, AI that, AI the other. But like we still need to eat, sleep, transport. Like the basics still apply.
Yeah,
so how do you apply technology to make them smarter and better? The fundamental is the fundamentals.
Yeah.
It's just how do you get technology injected into that?
Yeah.
Like perfect example is the solar panels. Perfect. Totally obvious, makes sense, has a real material impact. I think a lot of people are working on these nonsense AI projects. They're like, what's the material impact here?
Well, for entrance last year to the Growing Further Awards, I would say 90% of them mentioned AI in some regard, even if it had absolutely no applicability to what they were doing. And so it is a kind of a catch-all.
AI-powered concrete block.
Yeah.
So if people want to apply, what do they need to do?
So you can check out growingfurther.io, and that has all the details, but it's pretty cool look back with some good footage from last year's awards, give you a feel for what it's like, and an interview with all the category winners. Closing date for applications is the 4th of October.
Which is coming around fast, actually.
Coming around scary fast.
Yeah, fast comes around fast.
With summertime, it'll go by in a blink of an eye. So the process is pretty light. I think we've kind of 10 questions on a questionnaire. You can upload a supporting deck or video or something if you wish. And all building towards, we're going to invite 8 finalists. We're going to slim it down this year. We had 12 last year, 8 finalists to final event in Dublin on the 30th of January. So that'll be, we're going to try to get we had 200 last year, but 250, 300 people in the room. Make that
nice.
A really good networking opportunity.
Yeah.
And Gary Fox is going to be there as well.
Will be there in presence. Yeah. There we go. There's new news for me. I'll lock the diary.
Your diary's filling up for 2025 already. And we would want to make that room as interesting as possible. Good networking opportunity, and have a bit more fun with it.
But that's it. It's about the network, isn't it? The network opportunity. I know one of your groups is networks.
Yeah.
What does that mean? One of your group segments within the company is called networks. What does that mean?
That is, I suppose, the whole area of, we have colleagues in India in a company called TechMash. So they do all of our kind of CRM, investor portal type stuff, but that team has grown and they've done a really good job in that, so we're pretty hot in that kind of area. And then we have a company in Ireland and Germany called Yes And. They do all everything from kind of design to kind of data analytics type stuff. They've come together to form a company called TechMash. Called Yes Tech. I've mixed up my metaphors there. And they're really focusing on trying to build software to sell to an external audience, but then also work with the tenants very closely to get data analytics to where we want to get to, is the point where we can have a property running itself, basically. Mm. And starting point is what we a project called Project Horizon, where we're trying to put in as many sensors as possible and collect as much data as we can. And we're in that data collection phase, if you want to call it that, that ultimately what we want to get to is having these buildings being as smart as possible and as efficient as possible. So when we talk about networks, we talk about that data analytics side and how we can maybe get a bit of value for investors from harnessing that data and selling it to our tenants, basically. So it's a huge area. We're at the start of a journey there. We don't know where it's going to lead to, but there's definitely, you talk about AI, there's definitely AI can really help buildings operate more efficiently.
If you can process all that data, if people entering all the stuff into a database, if you can crunch all those numbers, that's fascinating.
And all make it cheaper for the tenant to occupy the property is the key thing. And that can help them be more efficient in their business. But also if we can make it cheaper and it's us getting paid for that, that'll be win-win, we think.
Well, let's sell your sawdust. You have all these access to all these properties. What else do they do to give out tons of data every day? I'd say an average center will give you out gigs of data every day. So what kind of sensors, what are you capturing?
A lot of it's a movement around the store. Where what works well, what doesn't work well, energy use as well. When do stores tend to peak and trough and all that kind of stuff? And it's amazing the information that's not been captured typically. A lot of it's very basic stuff that isn't. So we're starting from very low base, to be honest.
I think we all are. We look around and we have the real world and the digital world, and I think there's still a massive gulf.
Yeah.
Between the two, they kind of they live independently. And I think we still have a huge amount of work to do there in terms of bringing all that data across, because it's hard to capture stuff.
Hard to capture, yeah. So we're just starting to capture it.
Hopefully, you're listening to the pod and you're feeling inspired. Maybe you want to do new things in your own business, or maybe you have that brilliant idea you've always wanted to bring a little bit further and see if it works. So why not right now? You listen to the majority of the guests in this show, and they've been helped by the local enterprise office at some stage in the journey. They have something for everybody. Whether you have that idea you want to develop, you want to get your products to new markets, you want to innovate your existing products, or you want to expand staff and premises, they have the supports to help. So why not today? If you want to start up or grow your business, then contact your local enterprise office today.
We're talking actually, we were talking before we got filming about a company called Kitman Labs. So how they got going. A lot of people listening might know them, know their story, but I know the CEO, Stephen Smith, from school, and he was a kind of a rehab injury specialist with Leinster Rugby, and Michael Checa came in, and he was really interested in why people were getting injured, why they were out for such a period of time, and Leinster had this filing cabinet with stacked full of paper records of injuries going back a few years. So Stephen in the evening started like logging that, putting on a database, identifying patterns as to why people were getting injured. And I think for 2 years in a row, he told me they had like a 30% reduction in injuries, and that led to their first kind of Heineken Cup win. And like, all right, there's something in this. So Kitman kind of grew out of that, and now they're one of the leaders in kind of high performance sports data analytics, and started with him going through a filing cabinet, getting that data, getting it onto a maybe an Excel or whatever he was using at the time, and then building it from there. But the first point was getting the data and analyzing it
and making sense of it. The thing, like, we're collecting, like, we're all generating so much data every day. Like, I'm wearing a Whoop, like, now I was wearing my Garmin this morning running, like, we're generating so much data.
Yeah,
it's just, what do you do with that?
Yeah,
that's the key thing. I think that's the next, for me, that's the next next evolution of these things. Like, they're good nudges. Like, the next evolution is when it's actively coaching you, it's actively bringing you through. So when you're actively running the building on its own.
Yeah. And when I talked to Stephen, I was like, oh, so my, he kind of said, if you look at a sports organization, and their latest success is Bayer Leverkusen, her big client of theirs, which obviously shot the lights out last season. So he said, it's about getting everyone's generally pulling the same direction, but you have different teams who want different things. So strength and conditioning coaches and medical team and coaching team. And, but it's about getting them looking at the same data sources and, you know, the getting them off the same page, basically. So I was like, oh, well, you know, so people aren't overtraining. He goes, well, people assume that, but so people aren't undertraining as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe predicting different times of year when they might need to change how they approach things or whatever it may be. But the applicability is absolutely massive in high performance sports. And if that's leading to trophies, that's where they're getting their success. So it's, as you say, trying to get the data, but then analyze it and make sense of it is the trick. So
what? That's the question I was in my head when I'm talking to a startup. And I'm like, oh, cool idea. So what?
Yeah. But if you can keep people on the pitch and performing, that's the key thing. So
yeah.
That's
Dave Brailsford, who is now working at United, like, built that concept of marginal gains.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes total sense. The 1% every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's changing the tires, it's changing their mattresses, it's changing their pillows.
Their own pillows, yeah, all that stuff, yeah. Yeah.
So like it's I always love the analogy of sport going across to business, because I'm a massive fan of both. I'm always kind of going, like, sport replicates business so much.
Yeah,
there's so much overflow and so much that can be learned from sport, elite level sport. Like, you talk about, you know, decreasing injuries by 30%. If you were decreasing the cost of a unit by 30%,
yeah,
astronomical. It changes the face of retail. It changes how their business model works.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So I think a lot of businesses are, you know, have big puddles and lakes of data or whatever, and just don't know what to do with it. So we're trying to tackle that head on.
We had the guys from CitySwift on. The episode's coming out in a few weeks. Company based out of Galway. They do all the data analytics for transport for buses. And they went over to the UK, met the biggest company there. And they were like, oh, we've, like, I think they said 60 or 600 terabytes of data.
Right.
Like, can you do something with that? And they're like, yeah. They're like, oh, we're going to throw it out. They're like, we're literally going to delete it.
Really?
It's just taking space. And they're like, no. Give it to us. And like, they're like crunching all the numbers. Like, when's the peak? When's the trough?
Yeah.
What difference does school traffic make? What difference does a rainy day make? Fascinating stuff. Like, with real impact going, okay, we need 3 buses here. Or we thought we needed 1, or we need 1, or we needed 3. Like, all this stuff's only really starting.
Yeah. And there's a big regulatory thing element to that as well. You know, as an investment manager, we're signed up to the SFDR, the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulations. So they're starting off, the EU are trying to, I suppose, harness that data and make sure people are businesses are operating in as efficient a manner as possible, and collecting data and reporting on it. And they started off with investment funds like yourselves. But that's coming to all businesses over the next kind of 10, 15, 20 years. So that whoever can crack that collection and analysis of data without giving themselves a heart attack is going to be onto something.
Well, there's a ton of greenwashing going on.
Yeah.
There's a ton of like muddy in the water, just brands like paying a consultant or paying a cool marketing agency to go make it green, make it sustainable. And you're like, you're an oil company.
Yeah,
you're definitely not sustainable or green. You know, there's so, and that muddies the water.
Mm.
That I had Gary Lavin on from VitHit last week, and we're talking about like obesity and calories and diet. And a lot of it's education. A lot of it is like, it's so hard for the average person to understand how many calories should I be eating? How many calories are in a Mars bar? You know, how much should I be eating on a daily basis? And that's the same like for business and things like that. It's so hard for the business to capture that data and understand where they are.
Well, my poor dad, I'm going to tell you, although he's not a podcast man, but the doctor told him to cut down on sweet stuff or whatever. And my sister was giving out to him, he was having a Kit Kat. And he said, oh, there's only a thin layer of chocolate on the Kit Kat. But like, you talk about the confusion there about how to eat right, whatever.
Yeah.
No, he's in his 80s, but he's an extreme example. But,
but it's true. I think a lot of people are like that. So they'll have like the bubble around going lower fat.
Yeah.
But they've cranked up the sugar.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, high protein.
Yeah.
But they've just made it like taste better by adding in loads of like chemicals.
Other stuff, yeah.
You know, there's so much confusion and stuff. So I think I agree with you. I think the businesses who do well are the businesses that A, act in a sustainable manner, but B, are able to tell the story.
Yeah.
Like we're going right back to the start of our chat about like, you know, storytelling and just being able to tell a clear message. That's why I do this podcast, because I think that's the future of marketing. And I think that's why the Growing Further Awards is so clever, because it's pulling people towards you. It's bringing people with you in the journey, as opposed to like, you know, just throwing it down their neck. Green Man Group. Like companies spend thousands per day on ads just to like brand and stuff like that, where you're like, yeah, there's probably a better way to do this. Yeah. Bring people with you on the journey.
We're learning. Nobody's got all, like, things change so quickly. I mean, we would have thought 6-7 years ago we'd have a vertical farm, for example.
Hmm.
Things change really quickly. So it helps us keep our finger on the pulse of what's happening and having a bit of fun with it as well, which is important. Which you can do, like, in my head, like, we take a very long-term view of the business. You know, I'm relatively young. You know, we've a young business. So I want to be doing this in 10, 15, 20 years' time. And the likes of Growing Further, we see it as a way of kind of finding new avenues for us to grow in.
Yeah. And like, you're tapping into the wisdom of the crowds. Like, you know, it's very hard. If you've 20 people in an office, you're limited to 20 intellects who are busy doing other stuff as well. They have to do their own job without kind of going, okay, now come up with brand new business ideas, which is very, very difficult. Like tapping into the wisdom of the crowd is just, someone said to me the other day, like, you know, I just don't understand. People are not understanding the infinite leverage of the internet. I was like, it's a good point, to be fair.
The infinite
leverage.
Okay.
They're like, you have infinite leverage. They're talking about the podcast. They're like, you put out a clip, people can listen to that, you know, 10 times or 100,000 times. That's infinite leverage.
Yeah.
You're getting viewed all the time, over and over and over. And I think that's the future of marketing, is great storytelling done consistently over a very long period of time.
Yeah.
And I love when companies take long-term views, because I think it's short. There's a lot of short-termism
at
the minute, because we're kind of hopping from fire to fire and trend from trend, and the news cycle tends to be very dramatic. I think we've come out of a very dramatic period as well, so it kind of tends to make people on edge.
Well, we've never taken any outside investment for our business. Let's
say
we're all employee owned, which gives us, I suppose, that bit more control that we can get involved in different areas. And if people come up with ideas, they're really backed, and we've spun out different operational teams, be their own businesses that are headed up by people within the group. And that kind of, I suppose, bit of entrepreneurial kind of culture we've kept as we've kind of grown, which is really cool.
It's hard to be fair. You know, big companies tend to become bureaucratic by nature, you know. And I've talked to startup founders, and they've taken considerable sums of money from VCs, and you know, it's a 5-year game. They're in now in 5 years, so whistle me a tune in 5 years or we're gone.
And there's a spreadsheet somewhere with targets on it, and
everyone's got a boss. Everyone's got a boss and everyone's got a target, so like there's no free lunch. I think the power of being, you know, independently financed is huge. It's a key advantage in economies like this in 2024, when everything is tight, money's tight. Being able to have that freedom and clarity of thought is really unique, and it's a key advantage of you.
Yeah, it gives you the control, which is really important.
And that's what it's all about, though. It's been able to not be reactionary. You're able to now be visionary and go, growing further, right, this is a 10-year play.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get all these great companies, and something might come of it, something might not. But rising tide lifts all ships.
Yeah.
So what is the next kind of like 12 to 24 months look for, like, you personally, I suppose, and then the growing further words?
I suppose we want to make this get a lot of, the growing further is the big priority for me personally, I suppose. We want to get a lot of credibility, and we've done year one, having, as I said, not knowing what we're doing, but we managed to pull off a good event, and we want it to be something that is, I suppose, the leading brand in relation to innovation in that kind of food supply chain area. And I think year two, hopefully we're building up, we have a really good judging panel, and trying to pull off as good an event as possible. And then ultimately, if we can find ways to start making those links for the entrants and the finalists, and find ways to do these pilot projects. So I'd like to get probably two or three solid pilot projects off the ground in the next 2 years with people who enter the fund, and make those connections between ourselves and the tenants and the portfolio that we have. So I think that'll be a good success. We're having to work quite hard last year in particular, less so this year, but to spread the word about it and make it as international as possible.
Yeah.
I was very nervous this time last year that it'd be just all Irish people, and it wasn't really, but we want to get a good spread, including to India, where we've got a team to get good quality entrance mapping where we are active, kind of as a group. And that's going to take up a lot of my time over the next kind of couple of years.
As the alumni will tell your story as well, though, as you get more and more people through, you know, more and more people's success stories, like, it'll all build, it all compounds, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what's lovely about stuff like this. It all compounds in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's good news stories. Hopefully you can keep it going after a successful year one.
So I've started asking a lot of people, like, what's their formula for success? So I think of, like, it's called the entrepreneur experiment. So, like, you know, formulas, experiments, it all works in my head anyway.
Yeah.
What would you think are your kind of couple of core components for your own success and kind of the success of the Green Man Group broadly?
Well, it has to be, like, you know, the people you work with are crucial. Like, I mean,
so people.
Yeah. I suppose realizing where you're strong and where you're weak or whatever, and how you can complement the people you kind of work with. Because I haven't met anyone that's a complete all rounder and good at everything yet. So I don't think they exist. So, people plus a bit of the idea is important. So, if you get the idea, go to people who can help you. Because most people come with an idea, don't have a clue how to get it off the ground. That's in my experience anyway. But go to people, like, okay, well, I can maybe help you here, there, or whatever. And then, just a bit of backing from someone if you don't have the wherewithal yourself or the resources. So
perfect.
People idea backing
equals success.
Hopefully, yeah.
Nice. Sure, do a quick fire round.
Okay.
What book would you recommend every entrepreneur should read?
I didn't read it. I listened to the audiobook recently.
Close enough.
Champagne Football.
Oh, okay.
How Not to Do It. I was absolutely enthralled with it.
They're wild stories, aren't they?
Wild, absolutely wild. I mean, the man at the top, we won't name him here, but obviously had huge skills in certain areas.
Incredible people person.
But the way the whole thing was won was insanity. And there's still so much more to come out, I'm sure.
Very Irish. Very, very Irish.
Very Irish. But very running a big organization like that, just crazy.
Hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
You got to kind of shake your head and laugh at it.
Yeah.
What's something you need to learn the hard way?
As I just said, no one's good at absolutely everything. So I suppose earlier in my career, I would have put a lot more pressure on myself especially as you get more experience, like, okay, I should be good at everything now, but you're not. I mean, no one's good at everything. So it takes a bit of a while to realize that.
I like that. Focus on your strengths as well and make them better.
Would have saved a lot of stress in my earlier part of my career.
You always try to be a unicorn. What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
Oof. Not a whole lot. Not a huge amount, to be honest.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. I'm going to take a pass on that one.
Not a whole lot.
I like to think I've got a good balance, you know. So
that's what we're all about here. We talk about business, brain, and body all the time in the pod. Like, that's what we're all about, is finding balance.
And I think, you know, our generation probably are very conscious of that, or maybe slightly older generation mightn't be so much. They would have really driven things on. I mean, I know plenty of people who are, you know, heading up businesses or in really senior jobs and stuff, but they all take care of themselves. They're all, you know, take care of their fitness and their health and make sure their family's in balance and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think maybe it's a generation thing. I don't want to, hopefully not offending anyone when I say that, but I think definitely the younger generation are very conscious to have a good balance. And at the stage, you know, we're at with small kids and stuff, anyone equivalent are really involved in their kids' lives and stuff and don't sacrifice that much. Whereas maybe people 20, 30 years older than that probably did sacrifice a huge amount on the family front, but people are a bit more selfish with the time when it comes to that, I think, which is definitely a positive.
What would you do today if they give you €10 million?
Something that energy space, I think, it's really important. We, a company that entered the Growing Further Awards last year, MyGug, based down in Clonakilty, Fiona and Kieran, a husband and wife team, they have a biodigester on a small scale, basically. So they've used this large scale industrial process and shrunk it to be utilised in people's homes or schools or hospitals or those kind of small industrial settings, if you want to call that. Basically, you feed in excess waste into this egg-shaped unit in your back of your building, and that produces gas, which then can be used to fire up a hob for cooking.
That's class.
It's class. And it's not new technology. It's a existing technology that's been shrunk down, which is really cool. So it's making that, I suppose, large, like global thinking on a local, smaller level. And the example I saw, they have it in Bandon Grammar School, and they run, which is their catering team have like a hob, which they run a stockpot off. They raise their own chickens, have their own fruit and veg and all that, and they make soup for the schools. And it's just a really cool circular kind of thing. And yeah, back in a company like that or something would be pretty cool. Because I think that's something people can understand and get behind. Yeah, it's a real thing.
Real business. You kind of understand that you put the food in, you get the
and the it's not a revolution. It's using something that's already there, but applying it on a smaller scale. So I think they
that's what most great businesses are. They're taking an existing idea and making it better, faster, cheaper, smaller, whatever it is. Yeah. What's something in your daily routine you wish you started sooner?
Going to bed earlier. Yeah. I used to be not a morning person, but kids typically get up at 5 or 6 o'clock. So in the last couple of years, I've started to go to bed. You wouldn't catch me not in bed past 10:30 these days, which...
10:30, she's your late. I went to bed at 8:30 the other night and I was delighted with myself. Just, God, you can tell we're dads.
I much prefer getting up in the mornings now than I used to.
Same. Yeah. Especially in summer, it's much better. I'm going to give you €1 million. You can only invest in one company or one person. Who is it?
I've just given €10 million to MyGug, haven't I?
If you've gone early on MyGug.
Yeah. I don't know, it'd be good to give Collison's another £1 million to see if they could do it for me. That's too
pretty easy. Safe bet.
I like that just because I've already talked about it already, but the Kitman Labs, that's just a really cool, interesting story, and they're focusing on sport, but there's much more applications for that. So I'm sure that can just kind of grow and grow.
Yeah, man, definitely. Yeah. Must get them on. What do you believe that other people would find strange or strongly disagree with you on?
Coffee is a waste of time.
Get out.
I'm one of those weirdos that doesn't drink tea or coffee.
The interview is over.
People are absolute slaves to coffee and I just don't get it.
It's the one thing I am. I have to say, I won't say no vices, but a few vices. That is the one thing I love. Yeah.
I know. And you're not, I'm realizing I'm in a massive minority.
You are. But, yeah. I'm glad you realize that. I realize you're wrong.
I've created a lot of social awkwardness, particularly in our tea as well.
Tea is the thing. Coffee people can understand.
She'll have a cup of tea. So I'm like, no, not for me. I don't do hot drinks. Never have done.
It's probably going to be the most controversial opinion we've had all season. What's something you've spent €100 on that's brought you immense value or joy?
Definitely like a ticket for a match.
What's your poison? What's your favorite sport?
Rugby or hurling. Yeah. Trying to think. 2010 All Ireland when Tip beat Kilkenny. Definitely didn't cost €100 because I think it was in the Nally stand. But I'll never forget that. And we stopped the drive for 5. That was pretty special.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's your final piece of advice to every founder or aspiring founder listening?
Oh, I would have said 5 years ago, fake it till you make it. I never forget the first time I heard that. My sister said to me, Jesus, that's a great idea. that thing, don't realize you don't have to be perfect at everything, and then find somebody you can work with that can complement you where you're weak. That's the key thing.
I think that is one of the biggest unlocks you can have in business. Remind me again where people can apply to Growing Further.
growingfurther.io, or check it out on LinkedIn at Growing Further.
Perfect. David, thank you so much.
Gary, absolute pleasure. Thank you.